This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. Before I bring my guest on, Ayn Cates Sullivan, I'm going to share a quick story. About a year and a half ago, I was in a shamanic journey, and my great-great-grandmother came to me in this journey, and she said, "You need to dig deeper into your heritage." And I said, "Oh, I already know my ancestry." And she literally said, "No, you need to dig deeper." Which of course I did. You know, I take things that come to me from the spirit realm very seriously. And long story short, I reached out to a cousin who had our family history and was able to pinpoint the great grandmother that I connected with. And about 2 weeks later, somebody contacted me through Ancestry.com who said, "Oh, I'm your cousin, and so-and-so is our great-great-grandmother." Well, because I had dug deeper into the family history, I realized that our great-grandmothers were actually related. They weren't the same person. And she came back with gobs of information, one of them being that my family originated from an island called Scattery Island that is uninhabited right now, but at the time it wasn't, and that most of the people that were on the island migrated down to Clare County in Ireland, and that spurred this whole new passion for me. I've been practicing shamanic work for a really long time, but mostly here from Western shamanism and Andean shamanism, and I had been feeling really drawn to my Celtic roots. So when my guests, again, that's Ayn Cates Sullivan, when her work came across my desk, I was hands down like, yes, super excited about having her on, because her work is all around mythology and folklore, and she herself studied some of the Celtic shamanism techniques. So without further ado, welcome to Soulful Living, Ayn.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Yes.
And thank you also for doing your research and finding out your deep Celtic roots. It's very exciting.
It was super exciting. You know, I've always known that I was Irish. I had no idea how far it went. My great-great-grandmother actually had come over on a ship and met her husband as soon as she got off the ship. She was one of the only survivors. And there's all kinds of other stories, but most of it really didn't hit home for me until the last year. So when your work came, I was just super excited to have it. And you, I could idolize you for a good period of time, right? Because you've studied with so many different people, and you've done a lot of work with a master's and a doctorate in literature from Columbia and a master's in spiritual psychology. You've really just done a lot, and you've studied in Ireland for many years.
I was really fortunate. I was at Columbia, and I was offered a overseas research award at King's College London, and I was fascinated at the point. I knew that I had British and Irish ancestry. And so when I was given this opportunity, of course, I jumped straight on the plane and went. But I didn't realize that the deal of my stipend was that I had to spend time in the West Coast of Ireland collecting folklore. There's a renaissance going in Ireland right now. The people want to know the stories of their land, and you know, up until 100 years ago, I suppose, the stories that were told were Greek and Roman, and it was Lady Gregory who said, no, we have the stories of Ireland, and we need to bring them back, which W.B. Yeats did beautifully. And so now we have the stories of these wonderful, powerful Celts, especially fascinated by the women, because I hadn't seen solar goddesses that shine their own light, and warrior goddesses that empower the heroes and so forth.
Well, even in your intro, you talked about how the women in our Andes ancestry wouldn't just take care of the hearth, but they had to take care of everything when the men were quote unquote out on the hunt. And to me, that's just such a huge example of power and getting lost, you know, that the power of women, the divine feminine, really getting lost in the stories that have transpired over the years.
You have to look before the 5th century, but if you go back far enough, they're incredibly powerful stories. I mean, I believe you read the book, so it starts out with Danu, the mother goddess of the Tuatha De Dunan, but then we go right into Kaesar, which is the Labrigabala was one of the original stories of Ireland. It was for a long time considered the history. Now it's a myth, but it's a biblical story. And here we have Kaesar, who's not allowed to board the ark. So what do? You can't board the ark. You make your own ark and set sail.
Right. And as we're seeing even women today that are stepping up into politics and really stepping into these various movements, it reminds me of so many different stories that were in your book.
Well, we have Anya, Anya's a solar goddess. And if you look at Greek and Roman mythology or most other mythologies, I'm not including Norse, but most other mythologies, the women are lunar goddesses. That means they reflect the light of the masculine or the sun. And what's so fun about the Celts are all about equality. They don't want to be more than the masculine, but they want to hold their own light. And so I really love the fact that the women and the men unite, they battle together, they become druids together. In the system of the druids, you had to become a bard. You had to learn 250 myths of your people. Then maybe you become an ovid and you get to become a seer. And it was a very real thing. You learn the Olam, you learn the language of the trees, you learn what, you know, seeing a bird means. You learn how to walk in an enchanted world. You're just not walking down a road. You're walking down a road that has a tree, that has a doorway that leads to other realms. It's very exciting. And then after 20 years, maybe you become a druid. So men and women were both druids. They were judges, they were warriors, they were healers, they were everything. So finally, they're examples. I was really looking for examples of equality.
And so what would you say is the difference between what most of my listeners are probably familiar with, our shamanic teachings and initiations? What would you say are some of the differences between shamanic culture and the druids, or do you think they're basically the same thing?
Shamanic cultures generally and the druids, or the Celtic shamanic tradition?
Let's talk about the Celtic shamanic tradition, since that's what we're on, right?
Right, exactly. So, well, I'm familiar. I study with John and Kathleen Matthews, who live in Oxford in England, and they're experts in their field. And I'm also part of the OBODs, the Order of Bards, Ovids, and Druids. So in the Neo-Druid tradition, there's probably a lot of crossover. So, but I would say most Celtic shamanic practitioners that I know are basically ovates. In other words, they're seers. And there's a huge resurgence in this tradition right now, a huge crossover. So the Neo-Druids are probably Celtic shamans. So you could say the same thing. But I'm amazed at the hundreds and hundreds of people that are joining the orders right now. And I think it's because, you know, nature's crying out. And right. So there are a lot of people are turning around going, wait a second, you know, we've forgotten the body. We've forgotten our mother. We've forgotten the earth. Oh, wait, let's turn around and let's work together with the earth so we can create this golden age that's promised. What they say, 2025 is the golden age. So let's turn around and listen to the Cairns and the landscapes. And so I did actually go to the Cairns, and there's some places that are very powerful. One place in particular, La Crue, I remember going into you crawl on your belly, you go in, or you squeeze them through the stone, so you feel like you're going back into the womb of the Great Mother. And in the tradition, what you do is you lean into the stones and you listen to the dreams of the earth. Mm. And, you know, that particular place, La Cruz, it's been going on for 10,000 years or so. So it's a way of connecting deeply to your ancestors, and the ancestors in your bloodlines, and maybe the ancestors that are your starry beings. But your pulse starts to change. All of a sudden, there's this very, for me anyway, there's this very life-affirming pulse. Oh, I'm here. I'm finding my place in this world. I understand the dreams and visions that want to be born through me, that want to be spoken through me. Very exciting. Mm.
When I first began to study shamanic work in general, you know, and I had words, you know, that could voice what I was thinking and seeing, and people that didn't think I was crazy because I was experiencing these otherworldly, experiences. And one time my husband and I went to a place called Hocking Hills. It's in Ohio. It's not too far from where we live in Michigan. And I could feel that presence. You know, he's a photographer and he went off to take his pictures. And I just sat within the majesty of these stones and this, you know, treed forest. And I experienced nature and the other worlds deeper than I have ever experienced it, similar to that, where I just kind of laid back and I felt like I was part of it, and that I could see the mother of the rock and the trees unfolding, you know, walking through the oak. And to me, it's a practice that really needed to come back, because we had the Industrial Revolution and we got so far away from, as you said, far away from nature. You know, we got into machines, and now we're in social media and locked into our phones, and we get so far away from what the spirit realm and nature can really offer us.
Yeah, and it can be a great crossover, like we're doing right now, where we spend time in these sacred places, in these dream places, and then we can come and talk about it, you know, using our cell phones, which is really pretty terrific.
Right.
The difference, I would say, between a druid in the old days and a Celtic shaman now, is a druid would have trained for 20 years. That's mm-hmm. the difference. You know, whereas the Celtic shaman, you might go do a course and then you call your... So there's a depth to the ancient traditions that I believe is starting to come back now. And I did start collecting the stories 35 years ago, so it does take a while. I think one of the first things, growing up in this culture, we're taught that there's one reality. When we die, this is it. And then when I actually went to Ireland, Irish, and this would be you if you're 70% Irish, they're very mystical people. There's something else going on. There's already poetry and music in their soul. So you go to the rambling houses. These are people, you cannot dampen down their spirits, and they know that there are stories that live in the land, and they dance on that land, and they awaken. You know, they're going to dance around the Hill of Tar. They're going to dance at the Paps of Anu, and they're going to remember their tales. And this enlivens the people. Whether you're in Ireland as an Irish person, or you have Irish blood. I think there are 9 million people in the U.S. with Irish blood, but that poetic nature starts to awaken, and then suddenly we're not so frightened of it. You know, when you actually go there and you go and you begin to feel the presence in the land, then you go, no, this isn't crazy. This is actually healthy. This is healthy to understand that you're important in this world. And that when you sing with the, you know, if there's a storm coming in and the leaves are starting to turn, then you can sing, you can listen to that music and you can sing with that music. And there's something that becomes very alive in you. And then, you know, maybe there's a ceremony you want to do, or maybe there's a poem that comes through, but you're engaging in a living world. And I think if people lose that, they become depressed. They become sick.
Mm-hmm. Right? I couldn't agree more. And I think that that's a huge part of what happens, especially like in the winter, and that people on top of, you know, what they're losing is that they get stuck inside and they don't go out and really connect even with the winter spirits because it's all there. One of my favorite goddesses was Emer, since we're talking, did I pronounce that right? E-M-E-R?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, she talked about the beauty of Ireland and how she speaks and her, you know, the love story with,
it's a mouthful.
Yes. Oh my God. And the blessing at the end, but could you talk a little bit about her and what she went through, her journey?
So in Ireland, so Cuchulainn is basically the Irish Achilles. He's the great warrior of Ireland. Finn McCool is also, but he's very well known. So to backtrack with his story, if you remember, there's another goddess named Skaiach, who's a Scottish mm-hmm. goddess. And in order to become a true hero and warrior, you have to go first to the Isle of Skye, and you have to jump a 22-foot ravine, and you have to face this goddess who will either kill you or sleep with you or turn you into a hero. And you cannot be a hero unless the feminine deems it so, unless the masculine embodies the feminine and becomes magical. So I love that mm-hmm. in the
mm-hmm,
Celtic tradition. Right?
So yes.
So Emer is really a goddess of sovereignty. She's the beautiful May Queen, and he can't marry her. He can't obtain her until he's found this inner magic. And he can't be the hero. He can't truly be a hero until he marries her either, because mm-hmm. right, he has to marry the land, and then he'll be supported by the land. And so Emer's story, I had never really read that much about Emer apart from the fact that she was his wife. And so, you know, part of finding these stories and digging through them, and in the next series, we have the first woman to achieve the Holy Grail, who's usually called the unnamed sister of Percival. I was like, oh no, her name is Dendrana. So anyway, so with Emer, I had to go and think about the heroine's journey. The heroine's journey is different than the hero's journey. Cuchulainn mm-hmm. goes off and he, you know, he becomes this great thing. But to be a heroine, it requires becoming receptive to the beauty of the land. And so she really, to me, she's the embodiment, the Celtic embodiment of beauty. And so, you know, maybe confined in some way, she has to be kept safe as the May Queen. She has to be kept safe so she can hold the light of the culture, hold the beauty, the hope for the people. And so that's Emer, you know, the one with the vision, the one who learns to listen. The one who listens to the leaves, the one who listens to the water, who knows the well maiden. And so, yeah, it's also important, the heroine's journey, especially right now, like we said, we had the industrial age, and what happened? The Grail maidens disappeared because we weren't paying attention to these mm-hmm. these holy wells, the wonderful lakes and the streams. We weren't going in and asking for their permission. So we start to separate out. So Emer, when we connect to Emer, to the great beauty, to the May Queen, then it's an invitation to open up. It's an invitation for the kings and the heroes, too, to open up to who they truly are. And really, without Emer, you can't do that. I always remind my husband. My husband's Irish. He's a O'Sullivan. So when I met him, I said, oh, you're one of the Munster kings. I know you. I know you're
I loved that. I read that in your intro, and I thought that was so cool. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's really
very
fun.
Cool.
We still go questing together and to find stories and so forth. So,
well, yeah. And something that you said reminded me of a conversation I had. You know, the kings and the kings needed it. The knights needed this. And I think today that part of what's missing is the balance of, you know, for lack of a better terminology, the divine feminine and divine masculine. But it's not about just this Me Too movement and punishing. To me, it's more about, let's re-educate people, you know, let's reconnect with mm-hmm. the stories and reconnect with our roots. I mean, I have chills from head to toe. Let's relearn. You know, one of my favorite sayings that one of my yoga teachers shared a few years ago was learn, unlearn, relearn. And we've been learning a certain way, you know, based upon maybe that industrial age or whatever it is, you know, the societal changes. And it's time to unlearn that stuff and relearn the stories, you know, relearn to connect with nature and with our roots and who we really are, because we are not what's happening right now in our cultures. That's for sure.
No. Well, you know, really what happened is the feminine was taken away. The Arthurian legend, that's what they go look for, the Holy Grail. And whether, you know, in some traditions that's Mary Magdalene, in some traditions that's just the energy of the lost feminine. They knew that the feminine was fading from the land, that the magic was fading from the land. And it's in that tradition of Mangons is the king that goes and rapes all the Grail maidens, and they disappear, and the land goes into despair. It becomes the wasteland, and so the weather goes crazy. There's droughts. There's too much rain. People are sad. Everything's chaotic. That's the wasteland. We find ourselves now in the wasteland. And it's interesting that the king, if you look at his name, it's a man gone.
Wow.
And so it's
Wow. Yes. I didn't even think of it that way.
A man gone. So this is so it's, you know, both men and women have challenges. And right now, the book I'm working on right now is called Kings and Heroes. So I needed to write that for my son, and my husband, because they said, oh, these are wonderful feminine, empowering feminine stories. But what about the true leader? What does a true leader look like? And I said, well, let's start with King Arthur. But anyway, that's another show. But it's really important to find the archetypes, both when you go on a heroine's quest, you're developing your ovate, you're developing your seer, you're connecting back to the land. That's an important adventure for men too. And, you know, it's also important for a woman to go on a hero's quest. They're both important, but in a hero's quest, it's an action. You're going out, you're doing, you're achieving. This is fantastic. You know, you might be a warrior, you might be fighting a battle, whatever the battle is. A heroine's quest, you're going to be very still. You're going to meditate. You're going to learn how to travel to the other world. You're going to learn how to board the boat and sail to Tirnabhan or Avalon. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, as you know, because you practice shamanism, there's a whole process to learning how to safely travel into the other world. And we do have friends and companions. So when we read these books, like really what I was hoping to do with these books, is just to introduce a variety of characters. And one of them, like you said, Ymir, might become one of your friends and might be with you when you journey to the other realms and might open up the enchanted land to you so that you become a seer, a poet, right?
Right. Well, and what I love about the book, okay, so we only have like 3 minutes left and I really wanted to make sure that I got this in, right? One of the things that I really love about the book is that you offer insight on the goddesses and the mythology and the history, but you also offer practices and visualizations and, you know, like Ymir, I'm going to open up to her real quick because that's who we were talking about. You have the blessing at the end of it. And I love that. I love that you give the reader an opportunity to study a bit about it and to incorporate some type of practice so that they can become more acquainted with the goddess and with the earth. And I think that that's been missing in a lot of different works that are out there right now. So I really wanted to make sure I said that. I'm grateful that you included that.
Wonderful. Yeah, it is. It is a way if you go in and there are a variety of practices, and a lot of them you learn to follow the golden thread, which is your life purpose and mission, or some of the other goddesses, a silver thread to connect to the ancient ones. And they seem quite easy, but if you really do them and you dedicate yourself, they're quite powerful. And they do help you locate yourself in this time and place so that you can be the most of who you are.
And that too has been lost, right? I mean, we get stuck in comparisons and everything else in what's happening with social media and all these other things. And we really get lost in who we really are. And I think that people are really craving that. They're craving a connection and digging deeper, not just into the stories, but into who they really are and trusting their destiny. Okay, so we have a minute left. And listeners, I know it goes by so fast. It's unbelievable. Listeners, the conversation has been with Ayn Cates Sullivan. You'll find all of her information here at the Soulful Living page on Empower Radio. We were talking about one of her latest books, Legends of the Grail, Stories of the Celtic Goddesses. Do yourself a favor and grab them no matter what you're doing in life, because you'll find some really cool insight. I love for my guests to leave the listeners with something to take out into the day, elevate their soul, lift their spirit. Just, you know, something short and brief. What would that be for you?
I think in this day and age with so much going on that it's really important to stay connected to your wondrous inner child, the one who's curious, who asks questions, who is in touch with their creative spirit, and know that whatever's going on out there, if you stay with your heart and you look at the world with the eyes of your heart, you can create a new destiny for all of us, for yourself and for all of us. And so stay connected to that wondrous child. Don't be frightened of the enchanted world. There's so much magic. So enjoy.
There sure is. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me here today. And I can't wait to do part 2, 3, and who knows, maybe 4. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay.